Welcome back to the Hoop Stumble Podcast. You all know me, Nathan Schwartz, and joining me in New Zealand, Dylan Williamson. What's going on?
Good morning, Nate.
Good afternoon, evening? I don't know. 6 o'clock. Is that evening? Is that afternoon?
It's like the definition of evening. It's the quintessential evening time.
That's fair. That's fair. It's been a lazy afternoon. It's been nice to sit around and watch basketball, if you can call the Warriors-Celtics game that.
That they're feeling about as rough as I am. Wait, I went to a concert last night. The main act didn't get on until 9:30, and so I didn't get home until like between like 1 and 2. This is also in a different city, so I had to drive back the entire way. Mm-hmm. A couple hours drive after the show. And as I get to the onto the motorway, you know, straight drive home, nice and fast, there's a house being moved. And so this big house on this massive truck is taking up both lanes off the freeway.
Oh, God.
And so I'm trying to get home. It's like midnight. My girlfriend has work today. I've got this work today. and there's a massive fucking house blocking the entire road. But as I'm driving there behind this house, it's obnoxious lights flashing in my eyes. I couldn't help but to fix my sight on the logo of the moving company, and it got me thinking about logos. The Clippers changed their logo recently, or announced an update of their logo, mm-hmm. which I was thinking about as I was stuck behind this house, and it got me thinking, like, who actually is the best logo in the NBA? Because I am clearly biased, but looking at the Clippers logo, I'm like, that's a stylish logo.
I actually really like it. I am anti-minimalist jerseys. I've said it before. I do not like the Memphis Grizzlies. Like, three lines, make the M, make the E, just like 3-3-3. I just think it's an ugly-ass jersey. But I don't know who I think has the best logo. Because right now, everyone's kind of got that, like, circle basketball with something related to the team in it. Like, I have the Minnesota Timberwolves logo up in front of me. I like that. That looks nice. You might be right. You know,
because like a lot of the popular logos are sort of nostalgia or like prestige based. Mm-hmm. You know, like people would say that like the Knicks or like the Lakers have a good logo, but it's like all it is just like their name and with like a basketball. Like there's nothing, there's nothing brilliant about that. You know, from an objective standpoint,
Nets objectively have a terrible logo. That's literally all it is. And without the name in brand prestige, you just don't see it. I mean, I will always and forever be a big fan of 90s logos. So if you're watching this podcast on YouTube versus the audio files, like right behind me, got the Raptors. There's old 90s T-Mac with the Raptor on it. Got the Pistons, Grant Hill, but with the flaming horse. Like, those are solid logos. So it kind of feels like the Clippers are just a bit late for this. Like, that would have been a really good 90s logo, and you probably blow that ship out of proportion and make it like a whole big thing. Do you want the ship jersey?
it's a big goofy cartoon ship.
Yeah.
I think that the 90s one is also like a kind of a nostalgia thing. Like, because a lot of these are like really like fucking goofy logos. Like, if you brought those out and they didn't have that history of like it's referencing something, like if you just brought out a flaming horse in 2024, people would be like, what the fuck are you doing, man? Like, that's not a good logo. And then there's like the exact opposite to that, like you said, you know, like the Memphis's terrible logo, or like you know, even the Clippers' previous logo, which was, you know, straight lines, simple design, you know, this minimalist style that everyone hates. And then you get the Clippers with something that looks timeless and classy, modern, and gives an air of luxury.
Yeah, I really like it. I think it's a great move. I also like the colorways. Because it is red, white, and blue, and that is kind of boring, but it is slightly different shades of red and blue than what we see on everyone else. I would love it if they just fully embraced it and were like, you know what, we're done with red, white, and blue. The over-patriotic jerseys, I just think, are dumb and overplayed. Like, actually went for something that could be cool. The seafoam green in that was talked about in the 90s, I would bring that in. Just give me something different than red, white, and blue.
Again, I'm biased because red, white, and blue is my favorite colorway of jersey design in general. Like, even before I was a NBA fan, my favorite rugby league team were the Sydney Roosters, who are a red, white, and blue team. It's like the perfect three color combination. the French national rugby team. Like, those are some styly jerseys, man. It's a good combination.
It's just, it's faux patriotism. It's, we're going to have the stars and stripes of the American flag within our American teams. And like, what's New Zealand? You guys are red, blue, and white, right? For your flag?
Yeah, and all of our sports teams wear black and white.
Mm-hmm.
Because our flag is just based on like the Union flag.
The Union Jack. Yeah. Stupid colonialism just ruining all of our sports teams. America embraced it too much.
Mm. Like New Zealand and Australia actually too do like when we go team colors, they're not flag oriented at all. Like Australia's national colors are yellow and green. That I don't know if you can picture their flag. It's basically the same as ours. You know, it's the red, white, and blue. Our colors are black and white. Our flag is red, white, and blue. So you can break away.
All right. Fair enough. If so, like the Clippers jerseys, A+ from me, assuming that from you. But we've got some Eastern Conference things to discuss. Last week, we ranked the Western Conference teams as far as our ability or our belief in their ability to win the NBA championship. I really wish that I had listened to the Greatest of All Talk podcast before we had done that, because they had an episode entitled Friends Don't Let Friends Believe in the Clippers. And that might have been a good episode for me to listen to before predicting the Clippers to win the West. Where were you for?
Yeah. I did try to bring up the fact that they had been absolutely terrible in like the last month, that they were like 20th in the league in net rating over the last 2 weeks or something.
It's February.
Well, like, I think they had like an 0-4 losing streak when you picked them as the best team in the conference.
It's February. They just beat the Timberwolves today. I'm fine. I'll be okay.
Mm. Yeah, just beat the best team in the West, record-wise. Yeah. In a tough, grinded-out game. Like, you need experience in those tough, grinded-out games.
Yeah.
Is that a transition to a team that doesn't have to grind out any games because they outscore opponents by an average of 12 points per 100 possessions?
I sat down to watch that game, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to watch a live game. Normally, I'll wait for the games to be over. I'll watch the, like, 40-minute all-possessions recap on NBA.com just because, like, I try to watch two games a day. Spending 3 hours watching one game is just not a sustainable thing to watch that much basketball. Thankfully, I did not have to spend 3 hours watching that game because that was basically over like by the end of the first quarter.
Yeah, it was pretty ugly game. And like they've had a lot of those. We talked about last week how the Thunder are the only team that are top five in offense and defense in the West. And one of two teams in the league. The Celtics are top three in offense and defense.
That's interesting. And I've been doing a series on TikTok. I've called, you know, Champions Bracket. And it's just putting every championship team against each other head to head. And a lot of those really iconic teams, the teams that we look at and say, like, you know, they're top 10 champion of all time. They are top one and top three in offense and defense. Basically, you know, looking 2015 Warriors, top one in offense, top two in defense. Maybe flip that. The 71 Bucks. Same sort of deal, number one defense, number two offense. Like these teams are the teams that we look at and say are the teams of destiny, that, you know, destroyed the league. And like they crushed the Warriors. It was just a relentless onslaught today. Jaylen Brown, who was left wide open by Draymond Green multiple times, like, let me dare you to shoot. And he's like, cool. I just hit three straight threes in the first quarter. Jason Tatum was playing amazing defense. And so, Chris Paul tried taking it on him and just got swatted. They were hounding Curry, putting someone on him, picking him up like 64 feet. You know, I think it was just they were bothering the crap out of the Warriors. I know the Warriors are like fighting for play-in berth right now. So it's not like juggernauts fighting juggernauts, but
they've been a little bit as of late.
They have been. Although now Wiggins is out again, got family stuff. But like this was an ass kicking. There's no two ways to put this. They just beat down on the Warriors so badly.
Yeah, and looking at like the rest of the East, I think there's like a decent chance that Boston just like paces through the Eastern Conference, even playoff-wise. You know, like there are some teams that are maybe better playoff performers than regular season performers or whatever, like they'll lock in or whatever. Mm-hmm. But just looking at how good Boston is and the gap between them and the second team, it's like, is this a team that's going to get to the finals in like 20 games?
I mean, less than that. They're because what you only need to win four games each round, three rounds. So it's like 12 12 games to get out of the Eastern Conference, 12 wins to get out of the East. Going 12-2, that's super doable, I think, for Boston at this point. I was looking through the East and I'm like, you know, I can kind of talk myself into a couple of these teams, but everyone else just has significant flaws right now. And Boston, I started to look at like three-man units amongst their starting five, because I was like, maybe there's one grouping or like some cluster of these three starters that's bad.
Yeah, like if you like play without Tatum or something.
Every three-man unit, every combination, Tatum, Brown, Porzingis, Porzingis, Drew White, Brown, Drew White, all of them played a minimum of 682 minutes. That's the lowest of the three-man groupings. And has the worst net rating of that group, positive 8.25.
Like, man, that's better than...
That's better than most of the league. That's just just like, there's no way to split these teams and have them look bad at this point. And Horford has his moments. See, I've seen him look down a number of times this season, and today's game, everyone looked great. But like, Horford had a good defensive possession, got a block on someone, then gets the ball in the low post and bullies Curry. Like, if they have this top six, they're going to run away with the East. And I do not see anyone else that's like close to them. I mean, if we're assigning percentages on how likely a team is to come out of the East, they have like 80% of my vote to win the East, and the other 14 teams have the remaining 20%.
Yeah. Like they're heavy favorites versus the field.
Yeah.
I think what's most notable about them is you mentioned going through the rest of the East that every team has a glaring weakness. The Celtics have so many different options to counteract other teams' strengths or other teams' weaknesses. Like, mm-hmm. it's such a complete roster. The only like nit you could pick is that they really don't go very deep. Now, of course, that doesn't really matter in the playoffs. Like, they've got their six guys and they're better than, you know, any other six-man unit in the entire NBA. But they've been quite healthy this year. If they like lose one of those guys, then all of a sudden, you know, Sam Hauser is your sixth man. Maybe it gets a little bit more rough.
Mm-hmm. But Hauser's just making it rain from deep. Like, as soon as they decided we're going to start guarding Brown, Hauser just started hitting threes. And you're like, cool. So now this guy's just going to make us pay. It's really just brutal.
Easy choice for number one. Do you have a controversial number two pick for us?
No, I do not. They're not the number two in the standings. I am going with Milwaukee as the second best team, or the team that I think is second most likely to win the East. You know, the defensive rating since the trade deadline, 105 points per 100 possessions, second best in the league. That might shake around a little bit. We'll see by the time this post was tomorrow, but really good defense. And I hadn't realized it, but Middleton hasn't played since the deadline. And that kind of is my knock, is I think they're really going to need Middleton to get past Boston to go anywhere in the playoffs. And if he's just not healthy, then I think they're incredibly beatable. But Doc is figuring things out. The team is starting to figure things out. And I think the Giannis Lillard pick and roll that everyone expected to be their like bread and butter, we haven't seen it that much in the regular season. I think we're going to see more of it come playoff times. I think that's something that you just know is going to work. And so you try not to show it a ton until the playoffs.
Yeah, and I mean, that could be like the Doc Rivers struggling for adjustments ideas, like, okay, we can't score, just run pick and roll every position. Like, we're not going to do anything else. My only idea is run pick and roll every position. And maybe that'll work. Like, he had, you know, one of his best stretches or most notable stretches with the Lob City Clippers with, you know, Chris Paul and Blake Griffin as a pick and roll duo. And so he knows how to tell a team to just run 100 pick and rolls every freaking game. I think the thing that gives me the most confidence in them is I probably wouldn't have had them. I've got them second as well. And I don't think I probably would have if we went back a couple months, and particularly before Doc got hired, is they finally figured out their defense, which you wouldn't think would be a thing that the Milwaukee Bucks need to figure out. But they have looked better defensively under Doc. One of the big things that they struggled with was transition defense. And that's always been like the Doc Rivers hallmark, is that like everyone has to get back on defense. And so that's like immediately, you know, saves you a few points every game.
Yeah. They have the personnel to get back on defense. I mean, Giannis should be able to get back. I get it. Lopez is old and a little bit slow, but, you know, Crowder, maybe he's not putting forth the effort. They have the personnel to try and get back there and get stops. And in the half court, they have versatility. They have the ability to play Giannis at the four or five, bring in Portis if you need a little bit more speed, even in the front court. They still don't have great guard defenders. I do worry about how much Pat Bev is going to play. I also love the fact that as soon as Pat Bev gets there, he immediately just becomes the mouthpiece for Doc and Chirpy and just vocal leader BS from him.
Doc's going to play in 40 minutes a game in the conference finals.
What are his minutes per game at right now? Because I feel like it's got to be too high. You want to take a guess while I pull it up?
I'm going to say it's not that high because he fouls so much that like he like puts a cap on his own minutes. So I bet it's like 25 or something. But he actually can't play that much because he fouls all the time.
So he is getting 16.7 minutes as a Buck. So you undershot it there.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad.
He is averaging 3.1 fouls per 36 minutes.
That's not bad. Is that a career low?
I don't know, but Thanasis is averaging 6.1 fouls per 36 minutes. So, you know, not the worst. Let's see, career, it's his second lowest. Yeah, per 36.
How wonderful. If we want to talk about the Bucks winning the East, clearly we have to talk about maybe their matchup against the Celtics. And I think it's particularly brutal for them with the personnel that they have of, you know, they can play Al Horford, who's always been a really good defender against scoring bigger players. They can play him alongside Porzingis, so they can still have rim protection as well as a guy to guard on ball. And then they've got Jrue Holiday and Derek White, which is like the two, you know, the dream matchup if you're going against a team with a number one option type of point guard. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's a particularly brutal matchup for them.
Yeah, and the Celtics can kind of switch a lot. I mean, I wouldn't love to see Horford defending Lillard on the perimeter, but if it happens, I feel like Horford's got to know he can crowd Lillard as much as possible, try to force him inside, and then Tatum's become a pretty good help side defender. Derek White is having so many blocks this year, or just like an insane number for a guard. He's out blocking Giannis this season, which is just stupid. So like, even if you get one of those bad mismatches where it's like, cool, Derek White's now guarding Giannis in the post, they're doing a really good job at helping. And conversely, when Boston's on offense, the matchups for the Bucks just don't look as good. Like, Lillard doesn't have a great place to hide him. You're going to hide him on Drew, which means you have got no cross match in the open court or try to get him open on offense. Giannis has to either guard Tatum if they're starting with Porzingis and Tatum at the 4-5, which I don't like that. That's going to pull him away. He's going to have to defend in space a lot more. Or if they go double bigs, it's not a clean matchup for Milwaukee. And I think unless Middleton can come back and be a true third star, they're just outgunned.
Yeah, and they may need him, maybe what you were getting at, defensively as much as they do need him offensively, because like you say, like if Giannis is defending Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum, number one, he's probably overrated as an on-ball defender, and so that's already not a great matchup. It's probably their best option, but not great. But then also having him defend on-ball eliminates all of his real defensive impact, which is as a help defender. And so having Middleton to be a guy that you can put on a forward who, you know, at least is an intelligent defender, has some size and some strength and some experience maybe playing against high level wings, I think will be big for them defensively as well as offensively.
And you just look at who would push to the bench. So right now they're starting Crowder and Malik Beasley, which Crowder and Beasley, fine regular season players. In the playoffs, though, you kind of want the combination of the two of them, someone who can shoot and play defense. Against Boston, I would assume you're probably going to air with Crowder, so that you have Crowder to guard one of Jalen or Jason. If that's what you do, then you want Middleton out there to guard the other one. Because if you've got Crowder and Beasley out there, whoever Beasley is guarding is cooking. I mean, that might mean you put Beasley, try to hide Beasley on Holiday, in which case now you've got Derek White going up against it's Dame Lillard, and I don't want him to have to work that hard on off or on defense. So it's just not good matchups.
Okay, kind of, this feels like a kind of game, or like a kind of series where Derek White's going to average like 20 points and 4 offensive rebounds per game. Mm-hmm. Like watching Dame or Malik Beasley try to keep Derek White off the boards is something my brain just kind of even pieced together. You know, like you plug it into an AI video generator and it just there are fingers coming out of the balls and everything. It just cannot comprehend what you're asking it to do.
All right, who you have as third in the East is most likely to win the title.
This is actually where I think you run into a lot of similarly level teams, except for one which has a big caveat, which is I'm still going to go with the Sixers.
Yeah.
Mostly because it's really hard to see any of the other teams doing it, but obviously it's going to rely on Joel Embiid to come back and be healthy.
Yeah, because without Embiid, there's something like 7-10 or 6-11, so something in there where it's close to 40% in wins without him. Kyle Lowry's looked good out there, not complete washed shell of himself. If he pushes the ball well, he does his old tricks of let me get bumped and let me draw this foul and let me stick my butt out. You run into me, you were in transition. Very classic Kyle Lowry stuff. And then Hield, I think, has actually looked better. He's playing with the ball in his hands a lot more since getting to Philly prior to today's game. 16 points, almost 6 assists, almost 9 three-point attempts on 42% three-point shooting. Just really good stuff. But ultimately, if Joel Embiid is not here, they're like a worse version of the Atlanta Hawks.
Yeah. Yeah, despite all those really good things that they've got going for them at the moment, since February 1st, they are 6-8, 23rd in the league in net rating, 21st on offense, and 27th on defense. So they are not a championship contender, this is like not even a play-in contender.
Yeah. No, I mean, like I said, worst version of the Atlanta Hawks. I mean, I would much rather have Trae Young than Tyrese Maxey. I would rather have DeJounte Murray than Buddy Hield. I would rather have Jalen Johnson and then Tobias Harris. I would rather have Onyeka Okongwu over Mo Bamba. Although Mo Bamba today looked okay. Like, you know, he was giving Derek Lively a little bit of work and then giving it right back on the other end. But like, it just, they've got a lot of good pieces. And I think they're well set up if Embiid is ever healthy. So hopefully he can come back and be ready for the playoffs. But yeah, they were my third with that giant caveat. I feel like we've gone from Boston at 80%. I'll give Milwaukee 10%. And then the 76ers like 3%. And then the next couple of teams like 1-2% each of chance of coming out of the East.
I don't think there's too much more to say about the Sixers. Like, we know what they are and we know the issue that they're facing. So if you're happy, we can move on.
Yeah.
To one of these teams with a 1% chance of making the NBA Finals. Who was your favorite of the next list, of the next couple teams?
So I just wanted to say the next couple of teams, because I feel like they are all in this cluster. And if we don't talk about one of them for the next like 40 minutes, I feel like someone's going to be mad at us. But the Knicks, the Cavs, the Heat, and the Pacers, they are all just like the same in my mind. And I went with the Knicks along similar principles of the 76ers, is that I do feel like when healthy, this team has shown they can be really good. When Randall, OG, and Brunson are all playing, they're outscoring opponents by 25 points per 100 possessions with an insane 131 offensive rating and 105 defensive rating. Will they be healthy? OG just got cleared for non-contact basketball activities. Randall was supposed to be reevaluated in 2 to 3 weeks after February 1st. We are now recording this March 3rd, and he's not been reevaluated. So I don't know, but I at least think they can do it. What do you think about the Knicks?
They were my pick for the next team as well. I actually can see a world in which like this is the team that like makes a conference finals or you know catches a break in an NBA Finals run. They've got like a lot of the prerequisites that you need to be a team with a puncher's chance. Like they've got an experienced coach. They've got depth of not bad NBA players. You know, that old adage of just don't play bad players. They can go, you know, they can put together an entire rotation without playing a bad player, as long as they're healthy. They defend pretty well. And then they've got a all-star offensive creator who could be the best offensive player in, you know, just about any series that they'll play in the East. And so they were my team. They've got what they need to be a team that can overachieve.
And as far as like the actual individual matchups go, them versus the Celtics, OG Anunoby is probably, if not the best player in the Eastern Conference to defend Jason Tatum, one of the top three guys to match up against Tatum. And that is very helpful. They still don't have enough guys to guard Tatum, Brown, Holiday, White, and Porzingis. And I don't know if anybody does.
Yeah. But
okay, that's just a lot.
Orlando Magic.
Yeah, fucking get Suggs and Jonathan Isaac and all those guys, but then you're not going to score any points. It just...
Yeah.
The other thing that I think really hurts the Knicks' chances is right now they're in the 4-5 matchup. I don't think they're going to be able to sneak up into the 3, and with the 76ers falling and the Pacers not quite looking great, I don't really see anybody jumping up to knock them down to the 6. And so I think they're destined for a second round meeting with Boston, which is just brutal, because I could see if they're in the 2-3-6-7 range, a pathway to the Eastern Conference Finals. And if you make it there, there's always the flukiness. There's always some injuries that could happen that you can make it farther. It's just, I think the whack-a-mole gets them before they can get to that Eastern Conference Finals.
Did you have a spicy take next, or are you going with the Knicks' best regular season team as well?
I think I do want to go with the spicy take. Go with the Miami Heat here.
Okay.
Are you Heat or are you Cavs?
I'm Cavs, but I could, yeah, I get the argument.
Talk to me about your Cavs.
Cavs are, they have something that I like in that they're an elite defensive team who have some versatility. They've got rim protectors. They've got on-ball defenders. They have been disappointing this year. Maybe not disappointing, but they've been bad this year offensively, despite having two really awesome offensive players, including one who has in the past carried teams to a number one overall offensive rating. Yeah, they've struggled probably with some fluctuations in availability, which makes it hard to be consistently good on offense. Probably defense is probably easier to maintain with guys going in and out when you've at least got an anchor and you can sort of play a similar way. But an elite defensive team who then have a guy in Donovan Mitchell who could be, you know, good enough to, when you get into that weird playoff basketball where everything's just slowed down and isolation, I think is a guy that's good enough to win a lot of those matchups. And so that's why I had the Cavs as my next team.
I get it. And they did just have this 17-1 win streak. But did you take a look at all against who those games were won against?
No.
All right. I want you to tally how many of these are impressive wins. Because it was like a 9-game and then an 8-game, or maybe an 8 and then a 9. We have Washington, San Antonio, Brooklyn, Chicago, Milwaukee, Atlanta, Orlando. Then they lose to Milwaukee. Then they beat Milwaukee. So they play Milwaukee like 4 times during this time. But so they beat Milwaukee. They beat the Clippers. Detroit, Memphis, San Antonio, Washington, Brooklyn, Toronto.
Okay, so they beat like 4 good teams.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the 17 streak includes 2 games against San Antonio, 3 games against Washington, 2 games against Brooklyn, 1 game against Memphis, and 1 game against Detroit, and then also Atlanta and Toronto in there. So it's like a lot of their numbers look really good right now because they didn't play anyone.
Yeah, they've got like the inverse of the Washington Wizards' recent run.
Yeah. I did a similar thing with them where I looked for a 3-man combinations of their starters. Like, how good are they when you rest one of the 5 guys or 2 of the 5 guys? Can the other guys plus bench still produce a useful team? And yes, but no. Every 3-man lineup combination without Evan Mobley was better than any 3-man combination with Evan Mobley. And watching them play Dallas, he just doesn't look right. And I have a lot of Evan Mobley stock for the future. I hope he continues to develop and becomes good, but he has not looked good this year. He is not defending as well on an individual basis. He's still providing solid rim protection numbers, but just watching him out there moving against other guys, I don't know what was injured, but it doesn't look fully healthy. And it does kind of have me worried about how they're going to look.
And formerly, I think the more concerning thing is obviously not his defense, but his offense, where he really hasn't made any great developments at all. Like, he's basically become just a rim-running center who doesn't even have great touch, can't really do much outside of, you know, away from the rim. Finishes at a high rate, but he's getting spoon-fed a lot. But, like, no floater game, shoots 38% from short mid-range, no mid-range game. The three-pointer, he's taken 32 all year. Made 11, which is decent, but when he's taken 32, you know, you're not providing anything there.
Hard to be that excited.
Yeah, yeah. And, looking at the on-off numbers offensively, negative 7 per 100 positions when he's on. Like, that's a huge, huge drop-off. Negative 7.4. That's 11th percentile among all bigs. Like, that's pretty freaking rough.
Yeah. No, he has been passing better. And the recent Cavs game that I watched was them versus Dallas. He had 7 assists in that game. He is 0 for 3 from beyond the arc. But he's trying to take more of those shots. It was not a very efficient game for him. And it might be small sample bias because I don't watch the Cavs every game and try to catch him every other week or so. But it just doesn't look good with him out there. And my preference going with Miami is it doesn't seem to matter who they put out there. They are 10-3 since January 31st, 13 games, 8 different starting lineups. I've tried to look for a combination, like, hey, are they better when it's when it's Butler, Bam, Rozier, or is it better when it's Jaime and Hero? And it just doesn't matter. They just keep winning. They just don't do the dumb things. And at this point, with what we've seen from Miami over last year's playoffs, over kind of the last 5 years, if I'm not comfortable with the team or that team hasn't shown me that they can be an elite team, I'm just going to put Miami above them. I'd rather have Miami.
Yeah.
I don't even know what it is. Heat culture, I guess. Just the ability to not suck, to not play guys who suck, to not give in and play terribly. Although they do that from time to time. And I'm like, this was the Heat that I predicted to be a sub 500 team this year. And then they bounce back and just take care of someone. And it's very frustrating as an analyst trying to find the numbers. And you can't put a number on heart.
Man. They have a similar profile to the Cavs in that they are being carried through the regular season by their defense. But when it comes to playoffs, you know, they've got that superstar that they can turn to. In the Heat games that you've caught this year, how do you think Jimmy has looked offensively? Because he is pushing 35. He sort of lost a lot of his scoring ability in sort of the last few years and has really relied a lot on foul drawing. Has had high usage, but I think his game's becoming more offensively limited. How do you think he's looked in the games that you've seen from him, and do you think he can still be that guy in the playoffs that can just carry a team like he did, you know, like he has done for the same team in previous seasons?
So the eye test was telling me that he looks better recently. And like, it's kind of that classic Jimmy Butler meme of like November, December, wash, January, February, starting to figure it out. March, April, MVP Jimmy. And then like, you know, just the steady ramp up. The numbers don't really show much of a difference. And he's basically been between 19 and 23 points each month. You know, shooting percentage wise, fairly similar. But he has it when he needs it. I think he's at this point really kind of figured out regular season doesn't mean anything to him anymore. Regular season is just biding your time, just get to the playoffs, and then he's going to turn it up there. Which, looking back over NBA history and doing a lot of the historical stuff that Aaron and I like to do, it's interesting because you always see guys have the statistical peak where they look really good, and then those numbers dip before they have success. Like Jordan's 88, 89 seasons, he's scoring more points than he is in the championship years. Kobe's 06 and 07 years before they get Powell, he's a one-man force. And part of it, you get better players around you, you score less. But part of it's also that mindset of pacing yourself, of being ready. So I don't know. I don't put too much stock in what Jimmy Butler has shown me over the course of this year because I keep putting stock in it. And I keep being wrong. And so at this point, I'm willing to just say, I'm waiting for playoff Jimmy to show up. And when he shows up, I trust that it'll be good.
Just because I've got it up in front of me and it's hilarious, I'm going to read out the His shooting foul percentage. So what percentage of his shot attempts does he get fouled on throughout his career? Starting way back as a rookie, okay?
Okay.
And this is percentiles compared to other players at his position, okay?
Okay.
So 100th, 96th, 96th, 98th, 97th, 98th, 99th, 94th. Career low his year in Philadelphia, where he was only 93rd percentile in shooting foul percentage. Then 99, 100th, 99, 100th, 99th. So he draws more fouls than pretty much anyone at his position, which has historically maybe not been a good indicator of playoff success.
That's interesting, but it works for him. It seems to work for him. I don't entirely know why. I don't entirely know how, but he shows up and does it. He's actually, I think we all do kind of know why, and we do all kind of know how. In the playoffs, you start getting there starts being a lot fewer fouls called. And so guys are able to D up a little bit more. They're able to be a little bit more physical. It takes away some of the threes. That takes away some of the layups. And guys are forced more into the mid-range. And so the guys who can really operate in the mid-range, while it's not as effective during the regular season, because free throws and threes and layups are the bread and butter of the regular season, mid-range is the most essential skill come playoff time, and Jimmy does that very well.
And like that's what probably gives them this consistently outperforming the regular season is they've got that solid foundation of versatility, defense, best coach in the league probably, and then a guy who can get his shot in a number of different ways.
Can I pitch you an idea to destroy Miami?
Is it how wild are you going? Is this like a game plan tactic thing, or is this like conspiracy theory involving like espionage and crime?
We're not setting up any of the players to marry a Kardashian. I'm not going to be that mean. I just want us to consistently vote Eric Spoelstra coach of the year, because there is the famous coach of the year curse where you're fired or leave within the next year. And I just want to see it. I just want to say, hey, let's get Spoelstra some coach of the year recognition. He deserves it. And then he won't be a Heat coach for much longer. And maybe that'll finally allow this, I don't even want to call it a dynasty, but like this mediocrity to die. like they can't consistently keep outperforming expectations. And if we can get rid of Spo, I think that'll go a long way to letting this die.
Yeah. It is pretty crazy that Spo does he have any coach there? I feel like he has one, right?
I'm looking at it. He's got NBCA Coach of the Year. I don't know if that's the National Coach.
National Coaches Association.
But I don't think that's the official NBA one. He was declared 15th greatest or in the 15 greatest coaches in NBA history. He's won Coach of the Month a good number of times, but I don't think he's ever actually won Coach of the Year voting.
Yeah, that's insane. I guess it's just too hard to give it to him when his team is like the sixth seed every year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if the voting was done after the playoffs, he gets it clearly. Like, but the fact that we do it during the regular season doesn't help. But all right. So Miami is my 5. They're your 6. Cleveland was my 6. They're your 5. Number 7. Are we in agreement that it's going to be the Pacers?
Yeah, like they're the only other sort of strong playoff team. We got to give them some credit for making it all the way to the midseason tournament finals.
Yeah, yeah. Who knew their season would peak that early? I mean, really, Indiana kind of fell apart when Haliburton got hurt. Not even fell apart, but just Haliburton through the first 30 games, 24.7 points per game, 12.7 assists per game. Over his last 15, we're looking at 15.1 points per game, 9.1 assists per game, shooting splits 45, 34, and like 76.5. It's just Haliburton has not been up to his earlier season standard, has not been playing nearly as well since coming back from that injury. He kind of talked a little bit about wanting to get back and play with Pascal, maybe not being fully healthy. He was talking about this at All-Star break, and it's just honestly, I know you got to play him. You got to kind of recruit Pascal to stay in the offseason, because if he leaves, that trade is detrimental. But you have the bird rights. I honestly, I would consider shutting Haliburton down for the next couple of weeks, maybe even a month. Just let him be healthy. You do not want to drive the franchise point guard who's going to run your team for the next 10 years into the ground to try to make a first round exit. Like that just seems like a bad plan to me.
Do you think that they should be better defensively? Like they early in the season, they were, you know, one of these sort of polar teams where there was, they were elite offense and among the worst in the league defensively. And overall season numbers, they're still second on offense and fourth to last on defense. A little bit better as of late since February 1st. Where are they? They've jumped all the way up to 22nd in the league on defense. So they have made some improvements. But look at the personnel, like Miles Turner, who's an elite rim protector. Pascal Siakam has been part of elite defensive teams. Don't you think they should be better defensively?
Not really. Well, so there's two things I want to get into. Or blocking a lot of shots doesn't affect the defense as much as we like to think it does. Being an elite rim protector and being the guy that makes you think you're going to block the shots can. And that I haven't seen Miles Turner's numbers as far as contested shots be nearly as impactful as other guys with that relatively similar block profile. So like Rudy Gobert, he was lowering guys' shot percentage by like 15%. I think Miles Turner was closer to like 8 to 9%. And when they were near him earlier in the year, if you have those numbers up in front of me in front, please feel free to correct me. But so like the high blocks, I don't think are the best or worst or anything. The other thing is I don't entirely love how we do defensive metrics. We don't really have great defensive metrics. The Pacers get out in space, get out in transition, which also means their opponent gets out in space, gets out in transition. And that is going to make their overall defensive numbers look worse than when they do in a half court. And we've seen them D up in a half court and be okay. Still not great, but not historically bad. It's just kind of the fact that they give up so many transition takes, such a high transition frequency and volume that I think really hurts their defensive metrics. And that's kind of going to be expected with the way that they play. So the fact that they're not good defensively doesn't really shock me. I mean, this team was starting Halliburton. They're playing Buddy Hield big minutes. Obi Toppin, not the defensive stopper. Like who do you expect to be a good defender here?
Miles Turner, Pascal Siakam.
And since Pascal's gotten there, they've been better. But point of attack defense matters. If they could have gotten like an Alex Caruso, that would have been helpful, or kept Bruce Brown, so you had like someone to defend point of attack as well as some backline defenders. But relying entirely on the backline's not going to get you there.
Okay, if we're to say that this team gets to the playoffs and they're healthy, who do you think is the best realistic matchup for them to just go on like a crazy offensive burst and just like run the other team off the court, you know, beat a much better team just because they are able to get out and run bomb threes and just outscore them?
Well, so right now they're most likely going to play Milwaukee or Cleveland. I don't like their matchup against Cleveland because Cleveland will get up and down with them. You got Mitchell and Garland, who I think can put up points just as well as the Halliburton and led or Halliburton centric team. And then Pascal going up against Evan Mobley and Allen. Like they have good matchups. Cleveland has good matchups for Indiana. Milwaukee, there have been some battles between Milwaukee and Indiana this year, and I would love to see that. It's like kind of discount Warriors Grizzlies vibes of like the team that's been here before versus the young up and comers, and I don't think they like each other, and I'm here for it.
Wouldn't that be like the most Doc Rivers way to end the season, by losing in the first round to the Pacers
after being up 3-1?
Interesting stat that I heard about that. Doc Rivers has the, this is from Dan Feldman on the Daily Dunks. Mm-hmm. Which you get as a member of the Dunked On podcast feed. Doc Rivers has the NBA record for most 3-1 leads blown, but he's never blown a 3-1 lead as the home team. And so all of his 3-1 leads have been as the road team in the playoff series.
Interesting.
And therefore the underdog. And so, you know, his proclivity for blowing 3-1 leads maybe doesn't necessarily apply to a 2-7 matchup.
Do you know about the Orlando 3-1 collapse, where they are, I forget if they're the 7th seed or the 8th seed, but they're going up against the Pistons the year before the Pistons win the title? It's like 2000, maybe it's 2 years before, it might be 02. But no, it is 03, the year before they won the title. Do you know anything about that series?
Other than they were an inferior team and went up 3-1 and then lost.
So it's the first year that they are doing seven-game series in the first round. Before that, it had always been three-game series. And after T-Mac wins game four, he celebrates and tells the media he's so excited to be going to the second round.
Oh, my God.
And they're like, you have to win one more. And he's like, what do you mean I have to win one more? I have been carrying this garbage team with, like, Gordon Giracek as a starter. Like, what do you mean? And I put that squarely on Doc Rivers' back. I do not care. You have to have your team ready for the fact that they have to play a seven-game series. Like, that, I think, is just an absolute coaching failure. I don't care that they were the inferior team that went up by this much. They did not know that they needed to win four games. That's a coaching thing.
That's incredible. Do you think that Doc knew?
I don't know. But T-Mac's numbers that series, I just pulled them up. First four games, 36 points per game, 8 boards, 4.5 assists, 2.3 steals, 1.3 blocks.
God damn.
In the final three games, 25.7 points per game, 8 boards, 5 assists, 1.7 steals, 0.3 blocks. Just like huge, huge drop-off letdown after the premature celebration that he was finally getting out of the first round.
God. So you're saying Doc Rivers gets a lot of flack, but it's actually T-Mac's fault for not understanding the way that a playoff series works?
That's the inverse of what I'm saying. But, but yeah, no, I mean, that is a good point, that if all of his teams were the underdogs, although I think like the Clippers, weren't they like the 4 and 5 seed?
Yeah, and I think they were that may have even been like one of those wacky ones where the division champion gets in as a higher seed, even though they had a worse record. So I think they were very, very even teams. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So if Andy has fully healthy, I'd love to see them match up with Milwaukee. I don't think it will fare as well for Milwaukee as I would like. I think I'd still take the Bucks in six, but that's their best case scenario.
Yeah. And I agree. That was the team that I thought would be fun to see them go against, especially if they can get back to their early season transition defense and just get run off the floor. Do you want to run off the floor and rapid fire the rest of the teams because they're not going to make a playoff run and they're not very interesting?
I mean, listen, the eighth most likely team in the East to win the championship is the Orlando Magic. I would honestly love to see them play the Cavs. I think that could be a fun matchup. I think actually them going up against the Celtics in an 8-1 matchup, like, you know, Paolo guarding Tatum, that's at least a fairish size matchup. Wendell Carter is a fairly mobile big.
It'd be the toughest 4-0 series in the playoffs.
Yeah. Like they're the eighth seed in my mind, or the eighth most likely to win the title. Could they get frisky and get a couple games off of the Cavs or Bucks or someone else if they were to match up? Maybe, but they're not going anywhere. Honestly, the rest of the East, I'm really sorry. If you listened, what are we now? Probably an hour plus into this recording? Oh, there it is. 57 minutes, 26 seconds. I'll trim it down when I do editing, you know, on the audio version. Like, if you're listening this long and you're like, really hope they start talking about the Raptors or the Hornets or the Pistons. I'm sorry.
Hey, we can do a future episode on best Eastern Conference futures, maybe closer to the draft. But we're talking power rankings, and we've run out of teams that have any power.
Yeah, I mean, there was that moment where it looked like after Trae Young got hurt, we're like, cool. So the Hawks aren't going to be the 10th seed. Like they'll slip. Well, Brooklyn fired their coach and it's kind of pivoting towards the future. Toronto had Scotty Barnes. I believe he fractured his left hand, so I don't think they're going to make a run at it. Charlotte's still really bad, although surprisingly put up decent metrics defensively since getting Grant Williams. I think that's probably more fluky than anything, but just like, do you want to wax poetically about the Chicago Bulls' chances of making it into the actual playoffs and then being the easier 4-0 sweep than Orlando?
Oh, that is knowing just like the how good things just never happen in the world. I guarantee that's what's going to happen, is like DeRozan gets hot in one game, eliminates the Magic, and then they to win the playoff, the play-in series, or some shit like that, and then gets the reward of getting absolutely obliterated by the Celtics.
Yeah. I mean, listen, Chicago, here's some good things that happened to you this year. Coby White looks like a real player. Mm. He looks like, you know, someone that you could potentially build around. Patrick Williams neither exploded or completely imploded, which means re-signing him this offseason may be doable at a team-friendly contract. Right? And then if he takes off in the future, you've got him under like a good deal. And if he doesn't, you at least didn't overpay him. Like, that could have been bad if he had sparks this year. Third good thing that happened to Chicago, Andre Drummond had like a 20-20 game and looked really good for a hot second. And that at least is fun if you like Andre Drummond. So there, three good things for Chicago this year.
It's good. It's good to be a Bulls fan, man. Do you want to rank out the rest of these teams?
I mean, if healthy, Atlanta, Chicago, I don't know. I think the standings have done a half decent job of ranking them. You know what? Just because I want to do this, Chicago, Atlanta, Brooklyn, Toronto, Charlotte, Detroit, Washington. Suck it, Wizards. You are that team.
Nice.
That's just straight how the standings happen right now. But also because Kuzma had to open his big dumb mouth. Suck it, Kuzma.
Yeah. Did you see also that if their losing streak continues, that the game to win the record of worst team ever will be against the current holder of the record for worst team ever?
I did indeed. I don't think it'll happen. I mean, it's not going to happen. These things don't. You don't have two of these streaks in the same year. And
hey, we got two all-time terrible teams here. Did you know, speaking of terrible teams, that the team with the worst net rating by cleaning the glasses garbage time filter is actually the Charlotte Hornets? They have surpassed both the Pistons and the Wizards to be the worst team in the league with a negative 10.8 net rating, which is the expected win equivalent of 17 games, and they've already won 15.
And the Pistons had a stretch in there where they just lost a lot of close games. I mean, yeah, just looking back over their last like week or last 2 weeks, they lost the Knicks by two. They lost the Magic by three.
I did think, you know, when we were talking about them as the worst team ever, that part of that was they maybe did get unlucky, if you can call it that, because of how many close games they lost. Even now, they've won five fewer games than what their point differential would suggest, which indicates losing a lot of close games.
Yeah.
So, yeah, normally those even out and you get some breaks, but they did not get any breaks.
No, Detroit has not had any breaks all year long. But now they have Simone Fontecchio. So there's that.
There's always a silver lining.
Yeah. Speaking of silver linings, if you've listened this far into the podcast, you may already know this. We are starting a basketball book club on our Discord channel. Our book for this month is not going to show up on camera. Oh, maybe. Maybe. It's Miracles on the Hardwood, a NCAA college-themed book. Not my specialty. Don't know a ton about college, except for when it pertains to the NBA and players who came from college into the NBA. But I thought it's what the group voted on. And if you want to join the Discord, there should be a link in the link tree in the bio of the podcast. So be fun to have you guys there. Dylan, did you order a copy?
No.
Would you like to join me in my other book club?
I set myself a goal of reading five books this year. We're into March and I'm, give me 1 second. I don't even know where my book is. I'm not making good progress.
So I went from zero book clubs to three book clubs because I was like, you know, it'd be fun to start this basketball book club. And then at work, they were like, hey, do you guys want to do like a workbook club and we can read things that are like motivational? I was like, yeah, fine. Like, it'll be fun to do. Then I ran into like an old book club buddy from like years back and they're like, hey, come join this book club. It's really fun. Instead of reading the same book, we do a theme. So like whatever your interest is within that theme, you can.
Yeah,
you can read a book that's that, and then we discuss it, and so like people get good reading lists from it. I'm like, oh, that'd be kind of cool. And so their theme for last month was just read something by an African American author, Black History Month in the U.S. And I was reading Oscar Robertson's autobiography, so like perfect, great, I'm in. month's theme is we have to read a book about a coup. And so I was like, you know what? I'm doing the Che Guevara book. Because I honestly don't know a ton about Che Guevara. And I feel like he kind of became an internet sensation and a meme him for a while. I was like, I should know who he is.
An all-time great t-shirt.
Yeah. So come back in early April and I'll have Che Guevara takes.
I think you just need the hat and you can pull it off. Like, you got the beard for it.
I don't have the hair for it, though.
Oh, you're right, yeah.
I mean, I did used to have flowing locks. I had, like, the shoulder-length hair back in my younger years. You've probably seen it on Facebook. But, yeah, now I keep this thing shaved because the crown was thinning and I did not want the horseshoe.
Did you see him? Jokic Joestar's viral Che tweet.
Yeah. Why do you think I'm reading this?
Everything's basketball related, man.
If there is not serious opinions about Shea's feelings towards the Fidel Castro Eurostep in this book, I'm going to be very disappointed. This is 700 pages. I expect at least 50 of them to be on that discussion.
He would have loved the 2015 Spurs. Let's just say that.
Oh yeah, an egalitarian offense. It's every man doing what he can. Boris Diaw would be the hero of any revolution. Actually, maybe not. He maybe strikes me as a bit of an aristocracy guy, like the just chill. Let me drink wine. And,
yeah, he does have quite bourgeois vibes.
But he's like a working man's bourgeois. Like, he wants everyone to have those vibes. It's not like he looks down on the peasants. He's like, let me bring an espresso machine for all of you.
Yeah. Some facts on socialism for you. Friedrich Engels, who co-wrote a lot of Karl Marx's work that, you know, would go on to inspire communism and socialism, was like a guy that was very big on decadence. So like, he would love, you know, parties and champagne and all that sort of thing, and would also co-write the, you know, foundational texts on socialism. So there is room within the framework for decadent wine consumption. So Boris is fine.
So you're saying Boris might not be the Che Guevara, but he might be the...
He's the Friedrich Engels.
I like it. Well, Dylan, where can the people find you?
Every week on the Hoops Temple podcast and maybe at some point on TikTok. And also at a Black Country New Road concert until midnight. And then stuck behind a freaking entire house taking up both lanes of the highway.
You can find me here. You can find me, Nate_HoopsTemple on TikTok. You can email us, hoopstemple@gmail.com, or jump in the Discord. That just seems like a better way to communicate. We'd love to see you guys in there. There's a link in the link tree. So hit us up.
Beautiful. You might enjoy this. The band that opened for them, their name was Malsatui.
I do like that. That's nice.
Shout out Malsatui.